Hello, and welcome to this week's look at action and stunts on film and television. Burt Reynolds was the king of those good old boy movies. When he wasn't evading capture by the police, he was bootlegging across state lines. But it's safe to say that a huge amount of his success started with these two pictures. This week, we look at White Lightning and Gator.
My name's Gator McCluskey. You know why I'm here, don't you? I said you know why I'm here, don't you?
Burt Reynolds is Gator McCluskey. He's a booze running, motor gunning, law breaking, love making rebel. He hits the screen like a bolt of white lightning. Whether he's racing the law.
Won't be in trouble now.
Or chasing the ladies.
I don't believe in fooling around none. You want to just say so.
Gator's the fastest thing alive.
Ooh, now I know why they call you Gator.
Only two things in the world I'm scared of.
What's that?
Women and the police.
He's got a score to settle with the Bogan County Sheriff.
No sheriff is gonna kill any brother of mine.
Hey, you better come with us then, huh?
He's a damn tough cookie.
He run Bogan County.
I'm gonna get mean, Harvey.
I'm gonna get that sheriff, man.
You'll have to kill him.
And he means to do it one way. Or another.
All units, got a man heading after. Jacks are all cut him out.
Burt Reynolds is White Lightning. He never strikes twice, because once is enough.
Ladies and gentlemen, Burt Reynolds making his directorial debut on the new motion picture, Gator.
For my first film as a director, I didn't want to make just another Burt Reynolds movie. I wanted to make a serious film about close personal relationships. I wanted to avoid sex.
You charmed the shirt right off my back.
I wanted to stay away from violence. I didn't want any wild chasing. No hair-raising stunts. No fight scenes. I want to make a film about quiet times in the country. And the little things that make life worthwhile. But United Artists didn't want to make that picture. So we made Gator instead.
Gator McCluskey, now we know you in there. We're coming to get you, Gator.
He made a few successful pictures up to White Lightning, including 100 Rifles and Sam Whiskey in 1969, a TV show called Dan August in 1970, which ran for 26 episodes, and Deliverance in 1972. That gave him status and choice, something he'd not had much of up until this point. The movie was originally to be directed by Steven Spielberg, who'd gathered a fair bit of attention himself in the late 60s with his extensive TV work. But he was concerned at the time about filming outside the Universal lot, so he moved on to direct Sugarland Express in 1974 with Goldie Hawn. Spielberg pulling out made Burt even more determined to get the movie made. The studio approached Joseph Sargent, who directed a number of episodes of The Man from U.N.C.L.E. in the 60s, to get the job done. This movie also became the making of him, as he went on to direct the magnificent Taking of Pelham 123 in 1974. Hal Needham was in charge of the action and doubled Bert throughout the picture, realizing that the action needed to appear very real. Not just real from a stunt's point of view, but also from a directorial point of view. Hal not only coordinated the action, but also directed all the second unit material. Hal then brought on some of his top stuntmen and cast them in roles in the picture. Buddy Joe Hooker, Dick Zyker, and Glenn Wilder all got behind the wheels of cars, either as deputy sheriffs or doubling for other actors. Filmed out in Arkansas, the dust was just flying once Hal and Bert got down to action sequences. The major gag in the picture was Bert's character Gator McCluskey evading the police by jumping his car onto a sand barge which was pulling away from the dock in North Little Rock. Bert had said to Hal that having the barge move didn't seem logical, as the camera would be focused on the car making the jump and only get the landing on the barge at the last moment. But Hal was very clear that the added suspense was to be found in the barge moving away, leaving the audience guessing if he was going to make it or not. In hindsight, Bert was right. Hal spun the car round at the top of a long track leading to a purpose-built ramp on the jetty. Bert was there with the rest of the crew, biting their fingernails. When Hal floored the gas pedal, he managed to get the Ford Custom 500 up to 80 miles an hour. What he didn't know was that the barge captain had given his throttle the beans too, and took off much faster than he'd been rehearsed. The car flew down the hill and was launched into the air off the ramp, but because of the barge's additional pace, Hal landed short, and the front of the vehicle bent around the roll cage, breaking his back. Bert dived in to help his friend and managed to get him out of the vehicle as the ambulance crew got down to the shoreline. Bert went with Hal to the hospital and was told that he needed lumbar puncture to drain the fluid from his lungs. Hal was helped from the gurney he was lying on and propped against the wall, standing upright. Bert held his arms and a nurse held his ankles. The doctor plunged the needle into Hal's back, causing him to scream out in pain and relieve himself all over the nurse that was holding his ankles. He looked down and noticed that she was very pretty. In an apologetic tone, he said, "I suppose asking you for your numbers out of the question."
This is a tale of the supernatural.
The Tapes, a podcast of the uncanny.
Do you believe in ghosts?
Join me, host Christopher Goldie, and guests as we discuss the best in unsettling television and film.
Who is this? Who is coming?
Find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Search for @thetapespod. Part of the Pod Dojo Network.
White Lightning was made for $950,000 and took $18 million at the box office. That was a major success, and one that obviously required a sequel. Bert was obvious box office gold and was a shoo-in for the studio to do another picture, but he decided that the only way he wanted to reprise the role was if they allowed him to direct it too. In September of 1975, cameras rolled on this eagerly awaited return. Once again, Hal Needham was the stunt coordinator and second unit director. Again, he brought in a select crew to be behind the wheel of the numerous cars to be chased and boats to be powered across the bayous, some of which were Jack Gill, Dick Zyker, Denny Arnold, and Tommy Huff. Tommy would also double Jerry Reed in the climactic chase sequence, one that nearly cost Needham his life. If you remember the sequence, Reed, who plays the bad guy Bammer McCall, is escaping a beachfront property on foot, stops a passing pickup driven by a young lady who is thrown from the vehicle by McCall, who commandeers it. Bert Reynolds is seen running across the car park and leaps onto the back of the pickup as it speeds away. He reaches in the driver's window and tries to wrestle for control of the vehicle. Now this is where Hal Needham and Tommy Huff take over. A moment at the end of the chase is called for, where the truck rolls over and will pitch Hal clear. It didn't go quite according to plan. A small ramp was constructed, giving Tommy Huff a chance to ride the driver's side wheels up and give Hal enough time to leap clear before it rolled over in the sand. As the roll started, Hal left his leap a moment longer than originally planned. You can just see how close the pickup comes to rolling on him in the final edit. Ironically, the story of one of the biggest Hal and Bert outings, Smokey and the Bandit, was created on the set of Gator. One of the drivers was given a few cases of Coors beer, which he placed in everyone's refrigerator. The driver wasn't aware that Hal didn't drink Coors, but a few nights later, he looked in the fridge, and most of it was gone. So, he replenished it, and a few days later, most of that was gone too. So, on a rare day off, he sat in his car outside the motel and watched what was going on. The maid came in, cleaned the room, he checked the fridge, and sure enough, the beer was gone. He went downstairs to her cart, had a look, and there he found his beer. He went into the room she was in and asked her why she'd taken it. She started to cry. "Please don't tell my boss, I need this job." Hal agreed and said, "I won't tell him, but you tell me why you took my beer." She said, "My boyfriend likes it." He said, "Then why doesn't your boyfriend go and buy his own?" The next words out of her mouth were the beginning of Smokey and the Bandit. She said, "You can't buy Coors beer east of the Mississippi. It's illegal. It's bootlegging." He told her to go and take as much beer as she wanted. He was on location for 8 weeks, and by the end of it, he'd written Smokey and the Bandit. That's it for now. Join me on Friday for a deep dive into the action. And until then, it's bye for now.